Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello, and this is the China Sports Insider Podcast. My name is Haig Balian, and I am with Mark Dreyer. And for the very first time, we are live streaming on YouTube. And Mark, I am scared. How are you doing?
I'm excited. This will be fun. This will be fun. For people who have tuned in, it's not quite World Cup, season yet, but I'm wearing the England shirt, as you can see. So kind of, I guess, getting into a very, very early mood. Actually, just a little bit sweaty. Just came from a game of tennis here in Taiwan. And things are a little bit different here, Haig. Probably not what you're used to, because I know you play probably more tennis than I do. But yeah, it was a little bit unusual today.
What was unusual? What happened?
Okay, so basically there's four clay courts that we went to, and they are packed. Okay, well, they're packed kind of in the late afternoon, evening, because it's a little bit hot during the day. But basically, you've got four people on a court, but you don't book with four people. They just pair you up with anyone, and usually you come in a pair, and so you basically play singles on your half of the court. And so it's a little bit unusual. You got 30 minutes, so it's like it's hot and quick. So basically, let me tell you, one look at the pair next to us, they were probably twice our age, and probably twice as good as well. It was it was frightening how consistent they were. Well, we were just struggling to keep the ball in our side of the court.
You know, Mark, I played tennis yesterday as well. We played doubles. My wife and I played doubles with an older pair who've been playing for a long, long time. Wily veterans are really the trickiest opponents to have, because you think you can win because you're younger. I mean, this is just hubris. This is absolutely the wrong way to approach a tennis match. And they kicked our ass, Mark. The first set was 6-0. They spanked us. The second set we took a game, which was very, very good. And then
no one likes a bagel.
Nobody likes a bagel. I was trying to keep my emotions in check, but it's hard. It's really, really hard. Yeah. So you are still in Taiwan, and I am still in Vermont, and coming back hopefully next month. Still sort of seeing and reading everything about all the different experiences of people going back to Beijing. Not filling me with a lot of optimism and hope, but we'll see what happens.
I'll be perfectly honest. I'm not dreading it. I've done at this point, I think I told you last week, I've done 9.5 weeks of quarantine thus far during the pandemic, which people listening in the West they're probably thinking, are you completely insane? Well, possibly.
It's a lot of time.
I'm used to it, but I'm actually flying straight into Beijing this time because I don't want to get stuck. I think there's a higher risk of getting stuck in another city, particularly just ahead of the big party Congress, which is when I'll be going in. But quarantine in Beijing is not going to be as pleasant, at least according to the odds and according to the report. So it's a bit of a toss up. Do you get stuck for extra days somewhere else, or do you just Anyway, that's what it is. I wouldn't say I have PTSD, but I'm just kind of like, yeah, it is painful when you just see the rest of the world has just waved this thing goodbye. You know, the WHO is saying we see an end to this now. I mean, China is, I don't know. There's no end there.
I saw that, you know, and as I said last week, I'm in Vermont, and here it doesn't, it feels like the pandemic is something that happened, you know, a long time ago. Nobody really wears a mask. Sometimes they do.
Yeah.
You know, it's life is sort of back to normal, you know, for better or for worse. I'm not, you know, sort of like putting any judgment on that. I'm just saying it's just, it doesn't seem like it's a reality here anymore. And it's just so surreal to think about what is happening right now back home in Beijing, where, you know, we'll both be just about a month from now. But let's talk about sport, and let's talk about sport in China. And there is some actual news this week, which is kind of awesome. We're looking at a couple of stories today. Chengdu goes ahead with the World Team Table Tennis Championships. The IOC releases its human rights strategy 6 months after the Beijing Olympics. And the Russian doping agencies say they're coming to a conclusion on the Kamila Valieva doping case. But let's talk about Chengdu first. Just to be clear, Chengdu is in lockdown right now, right?
Yeah, it is. There was a headline I saw just a couple of days ago saying it was easing the lockdown, but wasn't coming out of lockdown. It's still very much in lockdown. We hope that it's not going to be lengthy, but history tells us in China, these lockdowns are not quick in any stretch. You know, there was Wuhan, the original one, that was 70 odd days. You know, Shanghai was 2+ months for a bunch of people. Then there were cities all over the north of China that basically didn't get any international coverage or certainly domestic coverage. You know, I had a friend she's actually a sports reporter for one of the local TV stations up there. You know, she was locked in her apartment for, I think, going on for 3 months. It was just absolutely insane. And then it was, you know, they were out for a bit and then they were back in again. You know, so the lockdowns that you hear about, and then there's the lockdowns you don't hear about as well. Anyway, Chengdu, yeah, we have heard about.
still
very much going on. But yes, the end of the month, in fact, September 30th, is when the table tennis team world championships take place there. They start there and they go on for about 10 days or so. And I was sort of, when I first heard that, I had someone message me and said, hey, by the way, did you know this is still going on? I thought, well, that's not going to happen. And then he was right. He was absolutely right. I looked into it and it is going on. And I thought, well, it's table tennis. You know, it's a bit cliche to say it, but it's basically a Chinese national championship. But without other countries, of course, it's a bit meaningless. So they have to get other people in. So how are they going to do it in Chengdu under lockdown? Well, wouldn't you know it, they're going to try to recreate the Olympic bubble that basically worked from a COVID perspective. From a COVID perspective, it worked very successfully in Beijing. Now, from a spectator, from everything else point of view, it was, you know, disastrous, perhaps a little bit too strong. But it wasn't enjoyable for anyone. It wasn't enjoyable for athletes. There were no spectators apart from, you know, a handful of people. You know, the TV was okay, but there was no kind of real atmosphere, and you could get a sense of that.
So Mark, how big is this tournament? Like, how many athletes are we talking about? How many countries are going to be represented here?
So there's 66 teams coming in across the men's and women's. It's actually pretty big. It is a lot bigger than I thought. You know, as you would expect, China are the hot favorites in both men's and women's competition. I think I saw that the men have won the last 9 in a row and the women the last 5 in a row, or possibly the other way around. So that perhaps gives you an indication of why they're so keen to get this tournament, played. You know, because if they can just lock it down for, you know, a week or 10 days, China can continue its golden streak, and then we can go on with wherever the next one is. So yeah, it's I think that absolutely has to be a factor. The fact that China has, you know, locked on odds on certainty for gold in both competitions, but it's not a small undertaking to with the China precautions for COVID zero, having this kind of closed loop is no small undertaking.
I mean, I'd love to know what athletes from outside of China are, you know, how they're preparing for this, how they're thinking about this, because this is a completely different world that they're going to be jumping into that they're used to, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah, and that's right. And we talked about this a lot over the Olympics, but you know, the mental preparation is key. You know, they're going to be training, eating, going straight back to their hotel rooms and spending hours and hours and hours in a very, very small space. Now, the Chinese athletes will probably be more used to it. It won't be easy for them. But, you know, that's just something they'll be aware of. This is not news to anyone, but it's not it's far from it's not what they want to be doing.
You know, and I guess from the Chinese point of view as well, I mean, they just had this experience of really holding the biggest, one of the biggest tournaments, sporting tournaments you could possibly have. So I would hope you can bring some lessons learned.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing that I was just thinking of in terms of, you know, the logistics and the decision making that goes into this, you know, China has had a number of tournaments, as we kind of, you know, joked, I guess, dark humor at this point, you know, yeah. Yet another competition gets canceled from China. Being the sport of table tennis, China being so historically dominant, you know, it obviously holds a huge amount of sway in the national, you know, the world governing body, the IWTF. And so, you know, that would be one of the reasons, I'm sure, why they're able to go ahead with this tournament. We see in a lot of sports that other federations are putting pressure on China with the Asian Games, for example, next summer's Asian Games in football was withdrawn from China, you know, whether China handed it back, whether it was stripped from China, you know, maybe somewhere in the middle. But I think that's why they had a lot more sway to say, look, we want to get this done. We don't want to have to hand it back. And the other countries probably have less pull when it comes to table tennis to say, you know what, we don't agree with this whole quarantine and closed loop stuff way that they can in other countries, in other sports. Yeah. I'm sorry. So yeah, so that's one of the reasons. I mean, look, from our point of view, it's good that something is happening in China. Like, so I'm not against it by any stretch, but
I was going to ask you. Yeah. Okay.
But I think those are some of the considerations behind the scenes that would have gone into what we're seeing, what we're about to see in Chengdu under lockdown 2 weeks from now.
It just seems, I don't know, that just seems crazy to me. Like when you're asking everybody to stay in their homes, basically, I mean, and then to have this, I don't know, big sporting competition at the same time.
Yeah, it'll be, I mean, if the lockdown is still pretty strict in Chengdu, you have to wonder what the people of Chengdu are thinking. You know, why are we putting our efforts into putting this on? You know, there's other priorities, but you know, we talked earlier. We'll definitely try and get one of the competitors on the show. It'd be fantastic to kind of find out what it's like inside the Chengdu bubble.
And we need a Chengdu correspondent as well for the China Sports Insider podcast to tell us, you know, from, you know, we will need an on the ground report here. What are people thinking? Out of the window. Yeah, exactly. we do have our Shanghai sort of correspondents in a way. All right. So that's definitely something to look out for at the end of this month. Okay. Speaking of the Olympics, way back, let's go back to February 2022. The Winter Olympics are in full swing. Lines were around the block for Bing Duan Duan merch. You had the wrong vaccine, so you couldn't get tickets to any events. And a Russian figure skater named Karina Valieva completely upended the games when the Russian Olympic team revealed she'd failed a drug test 2 months earlier. This was after she'd helped the Russian team win the gold in the team event, but before her individual events. Now the Russian doping agency RUSADA said that they've investigated and they're about to reveal what happened. So what is it that they're investigating?
I mean, honestly, who really knows at this point? It like an internal investigation that they kind of feel forced to do. This is, they have to do their own investigation into what happened before the world governing body and everyone else can get involved. So that's why we're in this farcical situation.
Okay.
I don't think there are too many people outside of Russia who are going to necessarily think that whatever the Russians come up with is hugely credible. Although, you know, having said that, I should catch myself. You know, that's perhaps more of a Western view, given that China and Russia these days are ever more aligned. You know, we went from a no limits partnership just before the Olympics. Of course, I think it was February 4th when they met in Beijing.
That's right. Yeah.
And I was reading today that now they're being called a tandem. I'm not quite sure if that's closer or further apart than no limits. But anyway, it seems like they're still very close. But the reason we're talking about this is because this was, without question, one of the very, very top storylines of the Olympics, certainly globally. I mean, I was doing some sort of phone-ins for various people around the world, and there was a period of about 5, 6, 7 days where this was all they wanted to talk about. What is the latest? What's going on? You know, what does this mean for the Americans? You know, can the other people get their medals? And so we still don't know. We still don't have clarity on who's actually won this competition. You know, you know what? How does it take so long?
6 months. Yeah,
it's obviously been dragged out.
So that's what I was wondering. Like, after whatever happens with this report, does that mean that the Americans and the Japanese, who came in second and third place in that team event, does that mean that at least they will get their medals now?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think that they'll have moved on. They'll be over it at this point. You know,
they don't have their medals.
There was talk at the time of you know, trying to be resolved by the end of the games, so they could at least have a medal ceremony. You know, I remember working with some of the people on the IOC during the games, and in terms of the medal tables, you know, there was discussion about whether to include this competition or not. At least would you include the provisional silver and bronze from the other two teams, if not the Russian ones, you know, and you know, this has ramifications in terms of, you know, where people are, where countries are overall in the medal table, particularly when it comes to gold. So, you know, here we are in mid-September. And again, it's just that there's going to be, we're close to a resolution, right?
Yeah.
I think that's what they're saying. Yeah. So whether that means another couple of months. Anyway, it was painful. It was painful then. Yeah. It's continuing to be painful. What I think is interesting is that this barely caused a ripple. You know, I didn't see this headline until I was sort of looking for stuff earlier for the show. You know, so again, it was a huge story at the time, but I think, you know, other global events have long since surpassed it.
Is there another global event with Russia at the center of it? I can't even imagine. You know, one of the things that we're going to have to talk about. Yeah, I can't think of it either. One of the things that we're going to have to talk about at some point as well is the number of foreigners who are still in Russia with, you know, playing in foreign leagues, specifically in the KHL. Kunlun Red Star is in full swing. Their season is in full swing with several Canadians and Americans. That's something we can talk about at another time. For the record, I just want to say as well, like Valieva, she says that she was somehow exposed to her grandfather's heart medication and that explained her positive test. So maybe that's part of the investigation by Rusada.
Yeah, I mean that was the line at the time that no one really bought. But you mentioned Cullen Red Star. I just wanted to have a big shout out to former guest on the show Rachel Lannis, who was an integral part of the Team China hockey team, as well as their strength and conditioning coach. And she's actually from she grew up in San Jose. She's just been appointed the head strength and conditioning coach for the San Jose Sharks AHL team, the San Jose Barracuda. So huge appointment for her. That's fantastic. And, you know, we spoke to her for probably more than an hour. And I would say, you might have a better memory of this, I think it was probably 40 minutes of her just riffing on about, like, the nuts and bolts of strength and conditioning. It was like, it was detailed stuff. We didn't put it all out, but we had a very good chat, and wow, is she ever passionate. I mean, she is perfect for this job or anything like it. I mean, I'm just so happy that she's got this you know, a pretty good position, and hopefully she can continue to move on up in the organization.
Absolutely, she was amazing. I congratulations to her, and I'm so psyched for her.
And actually, we spoke to her. She was in the Beijing bubble, or were they in Shenzhen at the time? They were certainly in quarantine, I think.
She was in quarantine. I don't think she was in Beijing just yet.
There's some other stories I'm thinking that she was promising to tell at some later stage. So maybe when she gets settled in her new job, we can persuade her to come on again.
That's what I'm thinking. There was definitely some stories that
gonna,
we couldn't.
Not going
to
say anymore at this stage.
Yeah. All right. Fine. So maybe in the future. All right, but let's move on to another IOC story, Mark, because this is also really interesting. First of all, what even is the IOC human rights strategy? What does that mean? Why is it even there?
Look, I'm going to have to answer this in fairly broad terms. But, you know, the Olympic Charter has a whole bunch of things and talks about, you know, the principles and the ethics and Olympism, you know, all these sorts of terms, of which human rights is part of it. And this was kind of a big thing in the build up to the Beijing Games, when there was a lot of focus in foreign media on the happenings in Xinjiang, and how this was, you know, this meant that according to some people, that Beijing should be stripped of the games. It wasn't compatible as it's as an Olympic host with the Olympic Charter and the human rights promises and all that sort of stuff, with the alleged human rights abuses that were going on in Xinjiang. And so, you know, we'll get to that other report in a minute, because I think the timing, while probably coincidental, is certainly significant, I think, with the UN human rights report on Xinjiang. You know, this is something that, if I'm being honest, you know, I think the IOC has lost a certain amount of credibility when it comes to these sorts of topics. They've long been seen as putting profit over other priorities. They kind of talk a big game, and the history is there to sort of show that this is meaningful. But I think whether or not they do mean it, they do believe it, I think that they're struggling in credibility right now. And we talked about this in Beijing, you know, that I think with the whole, you know, Thomas Bach and Peng Shuai and those sort of stage meetings, you know, there were pretty reasonable accusations of sport washing and all that sort of stuff, you know, using sports to sweep some unpleasant stuff under the carpet. You know, that's a longer conversation for sure. But I think there is some credibility missing. And I think the IOC were basically like, let's just get Beijing done, get out of here, and then go on to nice, safe sporting venues like Paris and LA and Brisbane, where people exactly. want us, where everyone wants yeah. us to go. But,
meanwhile,
you know, here
the
we
last
are
10 years, in the last 10 years, this is when they had, you know, their really controversial locations, right? Like, and they just don't have that right now. So I saw that Saudi Arabia wants to hold an Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, presumably they're going for the summer games, not the winter ones. But
I would imagine. I don't know. But I don't know.
Honestly, they could probably build it. They could probably build some indoor slopes. Look. You know, a couple of years ago, we would have said this absolute madness. But what sporting event is not going to Saudi Arabia these days? There's been huge, you know, boxing fights and martial arts. Of course, the golf thing that we've already talked about in previous weeks. You know, it's like, yeah. It's very sensitive, I think, right now. But I could definitely see it. I could definitely see it down the line. You know, we're talking 2030, I think it was the... No, I got
even
that wrong.
30,
no,
it's going to be 34, so, sorry. I think.
Well, it must be 36, because who knows at this point. It's a long way off, because
you're
we've
right,
already got Brisbane
course.
In
yeah,
32
you're right, you're right.
and Paris 24 and LA 28. So we're talking
right.
a long way off.
Yeah, yeah.
I was getting my numbers off with thinking, I think I saw 2030, which of course would have been a winter one. And
yeah.
Despite my joke earlier, I'm pretty sure that's not happening in
no way.
The anyway,
yeah.
That's, you know, there's going to be years before those decisions are made. But look, if the world becomes effectively socialized and normalized to Saudi Arabia and sport, you know, Newcastle United, it was like 20 minutes of other teams saying, well, this is ridiculous. And now they've got this, I don't know if you've seen this, Haig. I mean, honestly, it's just like, it's literally just sticking two fingers up or one finger, depending on where you're from. But yeah. like the one of the chain strips for Newcastle United is basically the Saudi strip. It's the white and green.
No,
you know, Newcastle
really?
Play in their famous black and white stripes. Oh. And they've got a Saudi Arabia style strip. You know, other fans were outraged for, like I said, 20 minutes. And of course, Newcastle fans were like, well, as long as they buy us some good players, we're on board. You know, the golfers are clearly on board with it, the ones who have signed up for the LIV Tour. So again, 5-10 years from now, when we're totally normalized to Saudi Arabia money, is it going to be a big deal if the Olympics go there? Probably not. And that is a shame. It's a massive shame. But I think, you know, I'm sort of just looking at the trends rather than anything else. And I think that's probably where we're going. Quick tangent.
Yeah.
I just reminded myself, I wanted to ask your opinion on something, because I mentioned okay. Newcastle and the Premier League and the Chelsea manager, the American owner of Chelsea, owner, Todd Bowley, has proposed, or at least made reference to, at a conference in the US, having an all-star game. Mm. And certainly the British press have been absolutely up in arms. And I've got some thoughts on this, but first of all, what do you think?
I think the World Cup is basically an all-star game anyway. Like, we already have that. We already have the all-star game. It's every 4 years. It's extremely special. I mean, you could do it. It's a fan servicey thing. I could tell you, with the NBA all-star game, it's like something that happens for kids, you know? Like, I don't care about it. I don't watch it. I haven't since I was like 12 or 13 years old. You know, if they want to have it, great. If they don't, what is the controversy about? Why is the British press up in arms? Is it a tradition thing? Like, what's going on?
Well, a lot of the coverage I've seen is basically along the lines of, you know, you can't have Liverpool. So basically they're talking about North versus South, or, and that would be the way you would divide it. So you've got the Northwest of the country. So you've got Liverpool and Manchester United players playing together on the same team. Now, they do that for England, you know, in certain cases, right?
Yeah.
So like, there's precedent here. It's just a bit of fun. I don't see why everyone is so up in arms. Frankly, there are far more things that irritate me about the Premier League. Preseason tours, for one thing.
Terrible.
The League Cup, which is, you know, you've got the league, then you've got the Champions League, which is the European competition. Then you've got the FA Cup, which has some history and some prestige. Then you've got another tournament, which is just a total waste of time. So people are saying, well, we don't have time for it. We'll get rid of some of those games. Anyway, I just don't see what the harm is. But I think more than anything, you know, I'm a Brit. Here I am. I'm wearing my England shirt. You know, I'm a York City fan because that's where I grew up. And unfortunately, that's the team that I'm saddled with for life, because that's how it works. So I do get it. I understand where they're coming from. But the whole, like, this is our league, you Americans, you know, keep your hands off, you just don't understand it. Well, that ship kind of sailed probably about 20 years ago when Abramovich came in, and then all the other foreign owners. And so fans basically still in their heads thinking that they kind of have a say in what their club does. I know they emotionally they think they do.
It's cute.
It is cute. It is cute, but that's all it is, Hayek. It's like, honestly, I would say to them, go and support a real team, like your actual local team, like York City.
Right.
You know,
go and stand
with 2,000 or 3,000 people on the terraces and actually have a real connection to the team, rather than, you know, be one of millions who support Manchester United. Okay, there are, of course, exceptions, you know, the people who grew up locally and all that sort of stuff. But my point is, it's like, why are people so fearful of change? You know, I saw one comment from a British pundit saying, you know, these Americans, they'll never get it. They're never happy until they change stuff. Why do they always have to tinker? And it's like, well, yeah, but also, if you come up with a good idea, what's, you know, there's also the resistance to change, I think, can be just as bad.
If the answer to, like, you know, a suggestion is because it's always been that way, that's a terrible, terrible answer.
Yeah. We're talking about one game for a bit of fun. And, you know, we're not talking about like a closed league and getting rid of promotion relegation, you know, turning it into like an American thing and having like a draft, you know, like fundamentally changing it. But basically, this is just like a bit of a mid-season break. Yeah. And honestly, I just think international fans would love it. I don't support a Premier League club, so I don't have this, you know, this protectionist view of things in the way that a lot of people that I've spoken to kind of seem to. So I'd quite like to see all these players on the pitch more than I would, like I said, at this preseason tour, you know, all that sort of nonsense. Anyway, bit of a tangent, but it was
totally
for
sure. And actually, one of the reasons that we're talking about this is because Fosun, which is one of the owners of a Premier League team, Wolverhampton FC.
Just call it Wolves. Wolverhampton Wanderers. There you go. Wolverhampton Wanderers. Repeat after me. Okay, Wolves. Just go with Wolves. That's the nickname.
Manchester? Is that how you pronounce that? Are they going to be? Do you think they're going to be sold? Because, like, no, that's another
our remaining UK listeners have now unsubscribed. So.
Sorry. So sorry. Well, you know, okay. So just to take a step back. I mean, Fosun is this massive corporation in China. They have their fingers in absolutely everything. Just if you look at their Wikipedia, they've invested in retail, tourism, pharmaceuticals, and you know, really importantly, actually, real estate. And the, you know, as we know, real estate business in China is struggling a lot. There's rumors now, and you know, Fosun denies this, that you know they're having trouble paying their bills. So under that you know, context, it's quite possible that we're going to have one fewer foreign-owned team in the Premier League. Maybe.
I would put on the brakes a little bit at this stage. I mean, I think that's perhaps a little bit premature, although it's not outside the realms of possibility.
It is premature.
So Bloomberg basically put out a report saying that banks had been asked by the regulators to check their exposure to Fosun, which suggests that Fosun is in a little bit of trouble. How much, we don't know. That obviously affected the share price. Fosun immediately denied this. And, you know, there's been Chinese media reports basically saying, oh, Bloomberg's wrong. And to my mind, that just means it's 100% true. Because,
yeah, I know.
Exactly. Like, why do they care so much? Why does the Global Times care about? Well, any chance they can bash Western media, they will take it. So, you know, how bad is it? Is the football club? I tweeted a few things today and had a Wolves fan or two basically saying, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. We're absolutely fine. We're a self-sufficient club. And I was like, yeah, well done. That's not quite how it works here in China. If the owners are basically told, sell off all your overseas assets, then that's exactly what they will do. Again, no suggestion at this stage that we're anywhere close to that. But we've certainly seen, you know, other people like Wanda would be the classic example. You know, huge investments in football in Spain, and the big Madrid, Atletico Madrid stadium, named after, you know, the Metropolitano, named after Wanda. You know, lots of investments there, and they had to dramatically scale back due to domestic troubles. So we've seen it again. We've seen it before, I should say. So there's no reason why we couldn't see it again. Again, nothing to worry about, I think, for Wolves. And as I've said, and as I've written many, many times before, Wolves fans try and jump down my throat, you know, Fosun were always likely to be by far the best owners, the Chinese owners that we've seen in terms of European football club. And that has panned out. And I'm not, you know, being wise after the event. This was my prediction when everyone went in with Aston Villa and lots of other clubs around Europe being snapped up by Chinese owners, Southampton. Most of them have ended badly. Fosun still going from strength to strength. Just signed Diego Costa, who's a fantastic player, past his prime, arguably, but you know, good signing for them. So look, nothing against Wolves, but you just have to look at this situation realistically and think, you know, there's some warning signs here. And you know, let's join some dots. It doesn't take it. It's not a huge stretch to see trouble in the future.
But I was definitely stretching it a little bit at that point.
well, to say, I mean, you're basically saying, you know, by the end of this season, we're gonna have one fewer Chinese on it. That's possible.
It's okay. It's not like
what can happen.
Know, it's not like it's a live stream or anything, Mark. Okay, well, yeah.
No one could ever hear this. So you could just edit this out, right?
That's okay. So let's edit there. And this is the thing. Like, this is the reason that I was so scared, because I edit my. You're a pro. You've done this for a long, long time. You're amazing at this. I edit myself to an inch of my life. Like, this is the thing that scares me a little bit, but this was fun. I really enjoyed it. And I think we should keep doing it.
Roll with it.
But we want to hear from you. Like, how did we do?
Just about to jump in and say, we probably better end it, because I think YouTube's probably in danger of shutting down due to the massive streaming numbers that we've been pulling out with tweeting 1 minute before we went on air. No, it's been fun. Let's try it again. We're definitely we've been promising some guests for a while, and we certainly will get back to that next week, if not the week after. So thanks for listening as always. And but again, we always love to hear from you. Tell us what you want us to talk about, what you do and don't like, and we're happy to try out some new stuff.
All right, thanks, Mark. That was fun.